Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest is Trevor Rudolph, the former chief of OMB's cyber and national security team, and now chief operating officer for WhiteHawk. Trevor, you're not quite a quote-unquote CIO, but boy, did you play a big role in every CIO's life over the last 4, 5, 6 years. So welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So you left OMB, I guess, maybe 2 months now. Give me a sense, why did you leave and what are you doing now? What is WhiteHawk?
In terms of why I left, it was time. When I looked at my time after nearly 5 years at OMB, I was a little tired of the pace, but I also didn't want to look back on my time in 20 years and say, why didn't I leave when I had the chance? The last thing I wanted to be was that irrelevant SES with completely atrophied skills and edge. And when I looked at all the opportunities out there, I thought this was the appropriate time.
5 years at OMB, I've heard, is a great experience. Mm-hmm. Hardest job you've probably ever had, probably ever will have.
Yes.
But you're right, there comes a time when you need to step back and say, mm-hmm. what about maybe me, if you will?
Right.
And that's what you kind of did with WhiteHawk. Talk a little bit about what this company is and what are you doing for them as COO?
It was a very unique opportunity to work on some issues that I found very important, specifically working with small and medium-sized businesses. But I had an opportunity to work with a great visionary, and our CEO, Terry Roberts, former head of Naval Intelligence. And specifically, what we're doing as a company is we're trying to connect small and medium-sized businesses all across the United States to best-in-breed technology. And we're doing this through what we're calling a decision engine that helps these small businesses that oftentimes don't have CIOs and don't have CISOs contextualize their risk, but then also at a tactical level, give them an idea of specific products and services that could be helpful in their environment or could be appropriate in their environment. So through this decision engine, we're actually routing small and medium-sized businesses to products and services that are participating in our marketplace. And it's a great idea. It's a great concept. And I've been brought on to execute. So the chief operating officer role is basically day-to-day ops. And so we'll see where this takes me, but I'm having fun so far.
In many ways, a middleman, but not in that traditional sense, because you're not just saying, oh, you need to connect person or company A with mm-hmm. product vendor B, but you're saying, here's the risk that you are facing, mm-hmm. and here's something you need to consider as you face that risk.
Precisely. Right? Based completely upon the environment itself, right? The uniqueness of your own environment and what might be appropriate and what might not be appropriate for that environment as far as technology is concerned. So again, the idea is if these organizations don't have a CIO or don't have a CISO, they need this type of decision-making value add or decision-making capability, or even if they have those people, a CIO or a CISO, partnering with them as an independent aid, I think is another way of looking at the business model.
And it's a fairly new company. You said Terry Roberts was the one who founded it. Mm-hmm. And if for people who may recognize the name, mm-hmm. not only was she with the, I think you mentioned Naval Intelligence.
That's right.
But she also was part of INSA, the Intelligence National Security Association.
That's right.
For several years, too. Mm-hmm. So that's mm-hmm. a well-known name in the federal community. You've been there all of, again, about a couple months now. How's it been going? Are customers, you get to run the day-to-day. So mm-hmm. is this one of those startups that you hope will be good to go in 6 to 9 months? Or you're already good to go? People will see the value already.
So it's very, very new. So a big part of what I'm doing right now is establishing a lot of our basic business processes, working on formalizing some of our vendor agreements so that we have plenty of vendors participating in the marketplace by the time we launch our offering. And we hope that will all be up and running in just a matter of months.
Let's go back to your time at OMB, 5 years. That's really mm-hmm. the reason why you're on the show. You worked on, if you will, every probably major cyber initiative over the last 5 years, mm-hmm. if not longer, at OMB. There's so many that we could talk to, mm-hmm. but let me just discuss some of the ones that you want to highlight, that you are most proud of, that really stand out to you, and then provide a little bit of context, a little bit of background around each of those initiatives.
So let me start with some context around my position itself, because that position didn't exist 5 years ago. So when I arrived at OMB in 2012, it's a little known fact, but the reason I took the job, it was Dominic Sale was the person who hired me currently a GSA employee, and he sold me on the position as an IT governance position. So looking at IT investments and saying, are they efficient or are they effective? And I said, okay, Dominic, I'll do this job. But really what I was interested in was the cybersecurity aspect of the eGov, so the Office of eGov and IT portfolio, because I knew a couple things about that portfolio. One, that the Obama administration, at least at the beginning of the administration, had not effectively resourced that capability within OMB. To give you a specific data point, we had about one-fourth to one-half of one human dedicated to this mission space. So if you look at FISMA and you think, okay, OMB has a responsibility of oversight and policy development for the entire government, having one-half of a person, that's a little troubling.
So just to jump in, yeah, it was that person basically wore multiple hats.
They had
security, they had X, mm-hmm. they had Y, they had Z.
Yep. More hats that could fit on one person's head. I tell you that much.
And I'm glad you're the one who said that the Obama administration had not effectively resourced it.
No, they hadn't.
I would have been less kind and said they ignored it.
Well, yeah, your words, not mine.
Yeah, but, yeah. Well, that's no, why I said I can be less kind.
Yeah.
But go ahead. So you got in, and we'll blame Dominic for this. We know him well.
That's right.
But anyways, you got in. You started to look at the cyber. Continue.
So what we were seeing though through the course of the following year and a half was a significant ramp up in the threat activity on both the .gov, the .mil sides of the government, but also in the private sector. And I just was very fortunate at the time to have it was the perfect storm. I don't know if it's a good or a bad analogy, but we had the increased threat activity. We had a willing Congress or willingness on the part of Congress to actually resource this capability inside OMB. But we also had really impressive leadership at OMB at the time. And specifically, I'm talking about Beth Cobert being the deputy director for management at the time, as well as Lisa Schlosser, my boss at the time, who really saw the need to develop this capability and to grow out a team to actually execute the responsibilities afforded to us under FISMA for many, many years. So that's the context around how I kind of got into the role. And basically, I came up with a strategy and a model to actually execute what I wanted to do. And Lisa said, okay, run with it and don't embarrass me. So I don't think I've done that yet. And I think we actually pulled off some pretty impressive tasks. So getting back to your original question, you know, we were focused on three pillars. The first was oversight. Some might call it assistance of federal agencies to say, okay, where are you in terms of your baseline of cybersecurity and where do you need to get and how can we help you get there? The second area was on the policy front. So really a big part of the job at OMB was figuring out what we needed to update, given the fact that we didn't have people to make those updates and to actually just execute. So a perfect example there was Circular A-130, had not been updated for 16 years until we developed a team to actually get that work done. And then the third was really the external affairs aspect. So working with the budget side of OMB, working with the legislative affairs folks and working with the Hill, to working with the vendor community to really get the message across that the federal government is taking this effort seriously, but it's a team effort. And we need the entire community kind of on the same page so that we can execute properly.
A couple of things I want to just back up on. Number one, for people who are not familiar with Lisa Schlosser, which I think mm-hmm. most of my listeners are, mm-hmm. She recently retired after I think more than 30 years mm-hmm. in government. She was the deputy federal CIO for I think probably the last five or six easily. And the other piece of this is, I think people need to understand, is when you talk about oversight or assistance, as you said, mm-hmm. what we're talking about here is cyberstat. That was one example of one. The other piece of the oversight was the DHS role with CDM, and that brings, you know, the policy side and the external affairs side. So walk me through each of those pillars and sure. maybe some of the initiatives you helped run. And then I know I have a lot of questions here, so mm-hmm. no, but that's fine. Also your staff also grew. You started with how many people? And by the end, I think you had
so quite a number. It was a team of one. And we eventually expanded that to a team of 10 federal employees plus some contractor resources. And now that's been expanded, both contractors and feds. I believe it's going to be a large team, over 20 people. And again, if you consider the mission space, all of oversight for the entire government, as well as the strategic policy roadmap for how to actually get to where we need to go, That I think that's an appropriate amount of people. It's certainly better than 1/4 of one FTE.
I know, and much different, and even 10 people seems like not a lot. And as you said, over 20 isn't a lot either, but still much better than
Than so one. It was. It's certainly my proudest professional achievement is actually not just getting the resources for this effort, but handpicking every single person on that team with a couple of exceptions, which we'll talk about later in the interview. But I want to go back to your question on the specific initiatives underneath those three pillars that I referred to earlier. So let's talk about oversight or assistance. So specifically, you mentioned the CyberStat process. So the CyberStat process, it's an in-depth, face-to-face program review of an agency's cyber program or a specific cyber-related federal-wide program, like a CDM or a FedRAMP, right? That's a cyber program. That's not an agency's infrastructure necessarily, but we would CyberStat both. And I think the thing I want to point out here is that before we had this capability, NSC and OMB were partnering with our limited resources on the CyberStat effort. But in 2014, I think we did something like 6 CyberStats. And so the reason that's a problem is it limited our intelligence and the depth of our relationships within agencies to actually get stuff done. And so just to recap, in 2014, we executed 6 CyberStats. In 2015, I believe the number was 14. And then in 2016, we just wrapped up 24 or 25 CyberStats. You're seeing a massive ramp up in terms of our capability and how we're actually spending those resources effectively. So we were able to contextualize the state of every single agency's, or at least the big agencies, cybersecurity posture and performance to better serve them, right, in the budget process, the policy development process, you name it. So that's just one example in the oversight bucket. So on the policy side, I had 2 goals in this space. One, we had to clean up our mess from the past, right? And specifically what I mean is just not having the resources to keep policies up to date and continually refresh them. We had legacy policies, right? And in circular A130 being last published or last updated in 2000 is a problem. So goal number one, clean up what we hadn't done for many, many years. And then the second goal was to think strategically about where the federal government needed to be in the next 3 to 5 to 15 to 20 years and establishing a roadmap for how to actually get there. And so specifically, some of the things that I'm most proud of is not just the foundation of Circular A130, which was a monumental federal-wide effort on the part of our team, but also things like the Cybersecurity Strategy and Implementation Plan, the CSIP, which had 5 targeted objectives to fixing our federal cybersecurity in just a very short time frame. And then more recently, of course, the President's Cybersecurity National Action Plan, or the CNAP. I think the real value of the CNAP is we spent the time to think through the root cause issues or the root cause challenges to our problems in the federal government. Or the root causes to our problems in the federal government, and then built specific initiatives and budgeted a lot of those initiatives to really move the ball forward and fix some of the structural issues, systemic issues that we have in federal cybersecurity.
Trevor, I want to go to the third pillar. Before we do that, let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll talk more about it. My guest is Trevor Rudolph, the Chief Operating Officer of Whitehawk and former Chief of OMB's Cyber and National Security Team. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. It's a very special Ask the CIO. My guest is Trevor Rudolph, the Chief Operating Officer at Whitehawk and the former Chief of OMB's Cyber and National Security Team. Now, as you know, Trevor, you were just going through some of the pillars that you kind of set up as you got to OMB 5-6 years ago, where you were looking at the state of cybersecurity oversight, and obviously it was not great. Pillar one was oversight, pillar two was policy, and now we're talking pillar three, which was what you termed external affairs. Talk a little bit about that effort.
The premise there is that we can't actually improve in cybersecurity without a full team effort in this particular space. So what I mean by external affairs is having a dedicated capability on our team inside OMB to work with the budget side to ensure that cybersecurity is effectively resourced, to work with the legislative branch to ensure not only that we have the resources, but have the correct or the right or the appropriate legislative framework or statutory framework to actually get our jobs done. And so that's really what we're talking about in that third pillar. So we dedicated a lot of time there. And so you saw, just as an example, a big increase in the ask for the 2017 budget in the cyberspace. I can't remember the exact percentage increase, but I believe it was large, 35% increase. In the early days of this team, we actually worked on FISM modernization, providing specific feedback back to the Hill to improve the bill at the time. And we're very pleased when it was actually signed into law.
And don't forget the external affairs point. And while the Hill is important and the budget side is extremely important, I mean, over the years of covering OMB and the federal government and the eGov space, the biggest failures have been in those two areas from where you sat. Mm-hmm. But the external affairs also includes, as you said, vendors earlier mm-hmm. and us in the media. And I think that was another key piece that you started talking about the vision, talking about the goals.
That's right.
One of the things I've learned over the years is that you tell someone something, you tell them again, and then, you tell them a third time. And it takes a long time for people for it to sink in. Talk a little about that aspect of your job, working with vendor community, working with us in the media.
Let's start with the vendor community because it's probably easier to touch on. You know, our whole goal there was, again, on this whole theme of being a team effort, we wanted to have good insight into the best in breed technology that was out there. So we would oftentimes just have conversations with folks and get a better understanding of what the market actually had to bear and how specific offerings could assist federal agencies. On the media side, you know, I think the point there your point is an apt one, and that is that there are oftentimes pot shots taken at the federal government in the IT space and the cybersecurity space. And I found it personally important to correct the record with data and with specific actions to reference back to as to how actually we're doing pretty well, especially given our circumstances. And you know, the common themes out in the media may not actually be accurate. And so I thought it was important to set the record straight in a lot of cases.
And without a doubt, a lot of times people think in government underestimate the value of getting out and talking about the positive things that are happening. One of the challenges that we find, obviously, is that idea that people are so risk averse that, well, no news is better news than even good news because that will be taken as bad news. Generally speaking, and did you have a specific media communications vendor relations strategy? Because in many ways, they're all related because you go to a conference and you speak at a conference. Yeah, I'm there covering you, but it's also 120 or 300 vendors that you're talking to as well.
We had the skeleton of a strategy as I was exiting in terms of, again, the most strategic way to engage with the right parties at the right time on the right initiatives, because I think that's what you're really getting at. So we started fleshing that out just as I was exiting. But, you know, I think the important thing was first a recognition that talking to the media was, in fact, usually a good thing, as long as you don't say stupid things. And once there was that broad recognition, then we were able to start thinking more strategically about things.
So you're saying no Russian hacker questions. That's what you're saying right now.
If you want to ask me questions, yeah, no, that's fine. I'll just be very measured in my response.
Measured, very, very mm-hmm. true. One of the things about external affairs that you didn't mention that I'm interested in mm-hmm. as well is the communication with other agencies, mm-hmm. in this case, specifically Homeland Security Department. The CDM program, as an example, that was at the very beginning stages when you got to OMB, and getting the budget side and Congress to understand the importance of it was a lot of work by John Stroyfort and mm-hmm. DHS, but OMB had to play a role. If DHS didn't have your office's support, it would not have gone anywhere, because CDM was a groundbreaker and is a groundbreaker mm-hmm. in the sense of Congress pre-funding mm-hmm. the cyber upgrades.
CDM was and still is a grand experiment. Right, the whole idea that the entire .gov would get together and figure out a funding strategy and then an acquisition mechanism for the benefit of the entire whole, the entire enterprise, it's pretty groundbreaking. And to think that it happened in our space, our IT and cybersecurity space, is particularly fulfilling. Now, that said, you know, the program still has some growing pains. I mean, trying to do anything of that size and magnitude for the first time is going to have, you know, certain challenges. But I do believe that once we actually deploy all the tools and sensors and have a federal dashboard capability that allows not only the operators, but the leadership at the top understand what the risks are and how to effectively mitigate them in real time. I mean, we're talking pretty close to Nirvana there. And the folks over at Homeland Security should be praised for this effort. And I'll just say as an aside, now that I no longer work for the government, I find it absolutely baffling that DHS essentially had to beg agencies to take free tools. It was just so frustrating. And there are legitimate reasons for why an agency, CISO, would have reservations about the CDM program, right? We won't go into all of them here. But logically, it makes sense, right? They may have an existing tool base, or they may have many users across fragmented operating divisions or bureaus where that particular tool may not make sense. But to think that DHS would have to go through so much work and get so many little permission slips signed to deploy free technology, and I'm using the word free, of course, loosely, it's just it should never have happened that way. And you know, you read a lot in the media about CDM and, oh, is it a success or is it a failure? You know, I think the jury's still out, but we're certainly trending towards success. But they should be given, a gold medal for their efforts, given the complexities of what they're trying to do.
Why do you think it was so hard? Is it just because it was so new and such a big change? Or was there something about the, as you said, the lessons learned that we can look back on now and say, well, that approach, whatever bit of that approach, maybe turned people off a little bit?
I'd love to bring in a procurement expert on our next interview to really dive deep on this issue, because it is fascinating. But a couple issues. So one, there's the whole you're not the boss of me mentality in the federal government. That's a huge barrier, right? And so I want to talk a little bit later about the Cyber Commission, and specifically one of their recommendations to create a brand new agency to do IT and cybersecurity for the whole federal government. Because I think that's the only way you get around some of these you're not the boss of me challenges. So trying to execute a multi, hundreds of millions of dollars program in that environment with an acquisition program or acquisition rules that are very dated and hard to deploy quickly or make the deployment of technology quickly very difficult to do. Those are some of the challenges and complexities of the program. But I'll tell you, DHS and GSA together have accomplished a lot.
Trevor, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can kind of jump into the kind of the state of cybersecurity, which I think we started to get into. My guest is Trevor Rudolph, the Chief Operating Officer at WhiteHawk and former Chief of OMB's Cyber and National Security Team. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest is Trevor Rudolph, the Chief Operating Officer at WhiteHawk and former Chief of OMB's Cyber and National Security Team. Trevor, before break, we're getting into kind of your office, your role in that office, the three pillars you were following. I'm going to ask the big question. Are we better off today than we were a year ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago? Are federal agencies more secure, data networks more secure? What's your take?
Without a doubt, we're better today than we were 3 to 5 years ago. If you just look at the cyber sprint alone, probably the initiative I'm most proud of, we actually have the data to prove that we have improved significantly in just a short period of time. So, you know, some things that are difficult to measure are increased awareness, better governance and leadership engagement. Beth Colbert and Tony Scott deserve a lot of credit there in terms of getting their peers to wake up and realize that this is an important issue. On the specific metrics, though, I won't repeat the PIV metric, but we obviously know that there was a rapid, well, I'll go ahead and say it, 40% improvement on the civilian side. Just the action of actually inventorying your privileged users had never been done at scale before. A routine scanning for indicators of compromise was not routine before the sprint at a lot of agencies. And the reduction in unmitigated critical vulnerabilities. I mean, we saw a 99% drop from when DHS started doing this work to work with agencies to actually patch and mitigate those open critical vulnerabilities. So, I mean, if you just look at some of those indicators, yes, undoubtedly we are better, but there are still systemic and structural issues that are limiting future progress. And I'm happy to talk about that a little bit later.
It's interesting you brought up the cyber sprint. So I, on my show, had Tony Scott, federal CIO, come on for an exit interview. And I asked him a very similar question. I said, what are you most proud of? What stands out to you of all the policies and all the effort you've done over your 2 years at CIO? What stands out to you? He said, FATARA, But more importantly, he said A130.
Mm-hmm.
So I brought up the cyber sprint to him, and I was kind of surprised. I figured cyber sprint was what you would tell me because of those numbers you mentioned, for instance, with PIV, smart identity cards.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, right, but cyber sprint got us going. That led to CSIP, that led to CNAP, and all that led to A130.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see the same thing, or do you really think cyber sprint, as you mentioned, is something that just marshaled so many resources and got people to wake up that really was the turning point versus another circular in A130, which mm-hmm. I understand the importance of it, trust
sure.
me.
Sure. Yeah, I think it's important to point out that Tony has a broader lens as the CIO than I had in my role as the cyber guy. But yeah, I mean, from my perspective, the sprint was the jolt to the system we had needed for the last 20 years. Almost as if we were under some sort of cardiac arrest, and that helped wake things up.
It's interesting because I would have pointed to, if you remember, again, you weren't in government at the time, but maybe you had heard about it, the laptop containing the data of 26 million veterans.
Oh, yeah, I was in lost. The government, just in a different agency.
So you remember that. To me, mm-hmm. that was the initial jolt that got cybersecurity awake and mm-hmm. people really starting to pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it took the OPM breach, again, another huge number, 22 million people affected, mm-hmm. to really get the system moving. Why do you think it was that?
That's a great question, and one that's very difficult to answer.
Do you get a sense that it took that 10 years, if you will, or 9 years for people to understand the importance of cybersecurity? I mean, if you think about 2006, there were no iPhones, right? There were no tablet computers. We were all still using these brick laptops, if in many cases. Desktops ruled the land. There wasn't voice over IP. And now here we are, 2014, 2015, OPM breach. Technology is such a part of all our lives. That's the, if you will, the click in the mind. Do you mm-hmm. get a sense that was the difference?
I'll go back to the Cyber Commission report, and I think I'm one of maybe five people in the entire district that's read every single word of the 99-page report. And it's pretty darn good. So I've got to compliment the 12 commissioners. But my favorite line from that report was, and I'm paraphrasing here, was something to the effect of, yeah, the Sprint and the CNAP, those are all great, but it shouldn't have required the biggest breach important records in U.S. government history to get these efforts going. And I think, you know, to go back to your question, why was this the catalyzing moment, or how was it that it took this catalyzing moment? I think OPM made things real for people, right? Because a lot of people actually received a physical letter or they received an email saying you've been impacted. And specifically, the most juicy details about your background have been breached. And frankly, seeing the hearings from my dear colleagues over at Office of Personnel Management, and I do mean that seriously, seeing them go through that punishment on the Hill, I think woke up a lot of leadership that previously did not care about this particular issue. Now, I will say, we have to daily combat what I call cyber fatigue on the part of that leadership rung, and that's going to be just a continued battle for the rest of time, in my opinion.
I think cyber fatigue is a growing term because there's so many breaches, so much of it happening. One of the things about that jolt, what's interesting to me is it got the secretaries and deputy secretaries mm-hmm. talking about the breach. And it got it brought up during the President's Management Council. From your perspective, was there a point, because you knew about the breach before we all did, I will assume, was there a point when you said to yourself, oh my, like this is bad? Do you remember a time where, you know,
yes.
Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, the OPM incident, and I can go in a lot of detail on this one, but it was the most frustrating slash exciting slash frightening slash rewarding moment of my career, just in terms of being able to play a key role in the response. It was particularly frightening when we realized the data sets that were compromised and what that might mean for all of our federal employees. We'll just say all of our federal employees. I have to be a little vague there. But yeah, I mean, we were working around the clock and we weren't sleeping, you know, and I use the word exciting and rewarding, and normally you would associate that with good things. But if we were going to deal with a complete mess, which it was, I wanted to be the one in the mess trying to fix it. And that was the rewarding and exciting part. And I'm very, very proud of what we were able to accomplish on behalf of the American people, given some very unfortunate circumstances.
Do you get a sense that the post-OPM, here we are a year and a half after OPM's, you know, announced the breach, the fatigue piece you brought up, is that happening? Do you feel
Yes. I'll be honest with you. I've heard senior leadership actually use the word, right? I mean, they're cyber fatigued. I won't point out specific officials, but it's a real thing where they said, oh, you know, I was asked to come into the administration to do X, Y, and Z, and cyber ain't one of those things, right? So let me get back to my mission. And so that's particularly troubling. I'll just go on a brief tangent here and say that I'm sure there are a lot of opinions out there about Trump's nomination for OMB director. Regardless of your political leaning, I would say the good news there is that the nominee is at least cyber aware, right? He's spoken on the floor about cyber bills. I believe CISPA was the most recent case where he actually offered up a couple of amendments. So I find that very encouraging because the director of OMB has to lead in this role. If that person is not willing to lead in this role, we will regress. I promise you that we will regress if OMB doesn't show leadership in this space. So having the nominee as a person who is cyber aware, very, very positive.
The CISO position, let's talk a little bit about that as well. This was an interesting naming. I think a lot of people were surprised by General Toohill, who was named. Not disappointed, maybe, but that was not a name that maybe people recognize. What's your take on the position, and is it having a difference that is going to be measurable in the next, you know, 6, 9, 12 months?
And let's just talk about the position itself. So will the position have a lasting impact on the federal government? I think it really depends. So if the position is unchanged and there aren't clear authorities for what the CISO can and can't do or what they should or should not be doing, then the impact is going to be 100% personality dependent, right? Are you going to get a Tony Scott caliber person in that role or are you not? Right. And that's going to determine whether or not it's successful. But hear me very carefully. The current position is flawed. And what I mean by that is the administration, I think, rushed to get a victory post OPM. And they wanted to be the administration that actually created the first CISO position. And the reason I use the word rushed is there was not broad federal-wide agreement on the authorities of the position. So I'm telling you right now, I sat in meetings where folks said, oh, if you're just creating another person to go on the federal conference tour or the speaking tour, then yeah, it's fine, but otherwise we object to it, right? So we haven't figured out, you know, does the CISO have any sort of operational authority? Does the CISO have budget authority over agencies? Does the CISO have the ability to unplug computers when certain users at agencies are not following sensible policies? Those things just were not sorted out, and largely because we were so late in the administration when we realized we really need to create this position. So I give the Obama administration credit for creating it. I think there's a fair criticism there in terms of how they rushed it. I mean, the CISO position is frankly, it's imaginary, right? There's derivative or transitive authority from the CIO, from the EGOV Act and FISMA. But beyond that, I mean, there's not even an executive order authorizing the CISO to do what the CISO is doing, right? It's all derivative authority from FISMA and the EGOV Act. So, you know, they're really going to have to think hard in the next administration if this position is going to be taken seriously. Now, I have a specific fix, which we can talk about later.
All right. Well, actually, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we can talk about that specific fix. My guest is Trevor Rudolph, the Chief Operating Officer at Whitehawk and former Chief of OMB's Cyber National Security Team. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is a special edition of Ask the CIO. My guest is Trevor Rudolph, the Chief Operating Officer at Whitehawk and former Chief of OMB's Cyber and National Security Team. Trevor, we spent a lot of time talking about the challenges that you faced when as leading that team And interestingly enough, we were just kind of discussing the federal chief information security officer, the federal CISO, and you said that this was maybe a little bit rushed, the position, and it doesn't necessarily have specific responsibilities. I mean, they're kind of, as you said, derived from the eGov Act or from FISMA, but you said there is a fix. So tell us what that fix is.
So in my opinion, we're wasting our time thinking about what are the proper statutory authorities of a White House position in the form of a CISO. So this is where I actually lean on one of the recommendations from the Cyber Commission report, where they say we need a brand new agency to do IT and cybersecurity across the federal government. And so the fix there is, if we're going to prioritize any effort in the next administration, that's the one I would prioritize, right? So you start to address the legacy IT issue, the workforce issue, and the fragmented governance or management of IT issue that we found as part of the CNAP, right? So you can address all three issues simultaneously. You start to build out a capability, a centralized IT capability for the entire federal government. As you prove that capability out, you can start migrating other agencies into this environment, reducing your risk surface in theory, and we can, you know, get into a technical discussion about whether or not we are or we are not reducing the risk surface. And then you make the CISO of that agency the federal CISO. You make it an operational position. So you can test out things in this new environment. You can test out new policies. You can test out new technology. You can acquire that technology much quicker. And you would actually give this person the capability to unplug computers for people not following those policies, right? So it's an operational position. And then over time, you would migrate, you know, I'm thinking big here, but you would migrate, let's say, all or part of the federal government under that environment. So it's not just the CISO of some agency, but a real powerful position.
So why not just take what DHS is doing, which is US CERT and KIC as two examples? They have the federal network office where that looks over federal networks. Why not just kind of pull them out? And that's the beginnings of that agency you talk about.
So you could. I just go back to some of the fundamental issues that the DHS has today, right? Where they're still in an environment, even with their FISMA authorities, where folks can say, well, there's no such thing as FISMA jail. You're not the boss of me. I'm not going to listen to you. But in this new paradigm that I'm talking about and what was referenced in the commission report, I think you start to address that issue.
It's a fascinating concept. It's difficult, right? It's going to be difficult to say, one, let's set up a new agency because that's going to cost money. And then two, let's have everyone start using the technology and tools and systems that this agency is going to provide. I mean, you talked earlier about the CDM challenge and the fight there was to give them quote unquote free tools. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine the fight to get them to follow another agency? I see that as part of this culture, people, technology challenge. How is all this connected?
It would be very, very difficult to do. Part of my approach when I was still there was to start small and actually prove out the concept that if we centralize IT services, we could win on, you know, performance, cost, and security. And so, you know, I would encourage the next administration, maybe we can't go big and actually create a new agency overnight. Maybe we can't get through that budget battle, but we can start small, prove the concept, and then folks, with any luck, will actually come to that environment and improve our security in the process.
One of the challenges, as I talked about, is improving cybersecurity across the board. And we've had this conversation for the last 20, 25, almost 30 years of why is this so difficult? From where you sat at OMB, from your experiences in the government, why do you think cybersecurity is as difficult as it is?
So my take on this is actually that it is remarkable that we're doing as well as we are, given the mission complexity and given that, in my opinion, the system is frankly broken. What I'm talking about is it's just too darn difficult to hire and pay people. It is too darn difficult to actually acquire tools in a reasonable amount of time. The budget process is completely broken. The one-year cycle of appropriations only perpetuates the legacy IT problem. The fragmented nature with which we actually manage IT down to the bureau level and the program level just doesn't make any sense. And the risk surface, right? It is just so complex. You know, a lot of people talk about the federal government being 24 CFO Act agencies. No, it's over 125 agencies when you look at it. So I've always said that the people on the Hill and the people in the media are a little cowardly in the pot shots they take against the federal government. the private sector has the same problems, especially when they're dealing with scope and scale complexities that the federal government has to deal with. When am I going to see Marissa Mayer up on the Hill for the Yahoo breach? I mean, seriously, I would love to see that, because she owes us some answers in front of Congress, just as some folks on the federal side had to do their time up there.
And this is not Yahoo's first breach. We saw Target, JP Morgan Chase. We saw tens and tens of millions mm-hmm. of Americans, citizens, mm-hmm. affected by those breaches. You're right. They never get dragged up to the Hill because they're not spending taxpayer money. And unfortunately, that's probably the difference. But you're right on the budget side. If you think about the budget, and I just wrote about this in my reporter's notebook recently, where the new director of OMB, how many budget cycles can he really impact if the average length of time is only really 21 months for an OMB director? He can only really impact maybe 2.5 budget cycles. So at the same time, how can the federal CIO or the federal CISO impact the budget cycles? To me, that's the biggest piece that's broken.
Yeah, I think you're right. It is so fundamental. You know, I think there are some proposals out there, and I think even the Cyber Commission talked about appropriating IT funds as multi-year or no-year dollars. I mean, that's something that I think you could have bipartisan agreement on. Maybe you start it off as a pilot and see how that goes. But that's one fix that I would tackle right away.
And I think the DHS CDM program that we talked about was the beginnings of that pilot fix,
yeah.
where they did appropriate, you know, no-year money or, mm-hmm. or long-term money to be spent when appropriate, not at a certain time frame.
Well, right, but there were still time caps on a lot of that money, which were appropriate, but you still had the same bumbling, fumbling acquisition process that limited DHS's ability to procure in a timely fashion.
Trevor, unfortunately, though, we're almost out of time, and this has been a great conversation. And when you look to the new administration as they come in, it's the federal CIO or the federal CISO come in and they say, who should I talk to? And someone brings up your name and passes along your email or your phone number. What kind of advice are you going to give them?
The first one is don't get distracted with the daily fire drills that usually end up being of no consequence. Fire drills that are usually pushed by what I call self-important appointees and their yes men. The second point related to that is think through challenges in this space in terms of underlying root cause. And then think strategically about how to address those root causes. The third is do your best to prioritize and to budget strategic fixes to structural issues in this space. Work with the budget examiners, partner with them early and often, because they can oftentimes be the ticket to your success in this space. But don't pander them too much, because they happen to be a little surly for the most part.
Trevor Rudolph, unfortunately, we're out of time. Really appreciate your service to the country. Really appreciate your time today. Trevor Rudolph is the Chief Operating Officer at Whitehawk, and he is the former chief of OMB's cyber and national security team. Trevor, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.